Palmer in the morning. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour two of the program is underway. If you missed part of hour one, then, hey, shortly, you'll be able to grab the Hour One podcast. Cutting it up hour by hour, throwing it up ASAP. Get it on your Spotify, your Google, your Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. We edited out that baboon thing, right? Is that possible we did? No? Well, Daryl Sutter going to join us in the 8 o'clock. A little what you want to talk about. Snow show all coming up on the program today. Boomer here downtown in the iconic downtown studios. Iconic electric and controls making lives easier and better. And we got Rhett Warner. And we've got Ryan Pinder. And we got Riley Pollock here as we get through our Wednesday. I wonder, what do you suppose Daryl ended up doing? You know Daryl, obviously quite personally there, Retro. What would he have done? Now, obviously, he was one of the many who was struck down with COVID, and I'm led to believe he was actually quite ill with it. But what does that guy do while you're in isolation? Can't hang out with anybody. You can't leave. There's no practice. You can only put the lines together so many times. Maybe we'll try Shillington at top line center. Can Markstrom play the wing? You can only do that for so long. Like, is he on Netflix? Is he doing crossword puzzles? What's Sutter doing while he's isolated and sitting around?
Whiskey?
Probably, yeah. It's medicine, right?
Yeah. Kills the bug. I don't know. Yellowstone? He doesn't need to watch Yellowstone. He lives it.
He lives it every day, yeah. He's
probably checking cattle prices.
Yeah.
He's talking to his sales guys, where they're going to sell the cows, the beef. Talking to his brothers, where are we moving the... You know, what field are they in? Where are we moving them? I would think he would dive into to a lot of farming and agricultural issues.
Nice little fallback to have. Mm-hmm. Give you something to do.
I feel like he's breaking down tape, too. He's not one to stop working, is he?
No, I don't think so.
I feel like he's watching. There wasn't a lot of hockey over the break there, but whenever there was, I'd think he's got
the... any of us.
Yeah. Oh, not even close.
That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
That is why. Now, we had it in the Pinder Report, and I said we'd get more into it. Now, I've got a couple of clips here on Jacob Pelche, the American Hockey League, and NHL Calgary Flames secondary scoring. They're all kind of weaved together, but we'll kind of process them individually because I really think they should be processed individually. He was asked about, in no uncertain terms, and Daryl knew it was coming, he sniffed out, I think it was Kristen Anderson asked about secondary scoring and do you have maybe some help in the American Hockey League. So he sniffed out where she potentially was going, talking about Jacob Pelche, who has had a very good debut season in the American Hockey League. But here is what Daryl had to say in terms of why there's no rush to get this kid up here now.
Because that's where they develop. It's really important as an organization that we do a thorough job of that. So when players, you don't just call guys up and then not let them have success. You want them to have 1 or 2 years of success for sure. Again, you're looking at Jacob, right, and saying, well, he's up there and scoring. Well, there's a big difference between the American Hockey League and the NHL, especially if you're a first year pro and you're undersized. Jacob Pelche is an awesome, awesome kid with a great mindset for the game and energy for the game, but it's quite a bit different when you're if you're not an elite scorer at this level, such as somebody like Johnny, and you're playing against guys that are 40 to 50 pounds bigger than you, you're going to have trouble. And you just got to mature and develop. That's for sure what Pelche will do.
And I'll play you the next one here because I do think, and I guess it's just always been that way, if you're in the American Hockey League, there's serious questions as to whether you're going to make the jump, regardless of the point. Yeah, he's a good scorer in the AHL. I don't know, and I want to get your thoughts on that, Retro. But here was more on Daryl, on the time that you spend in the American League and how valuable it can be.
Losing confidence, losing basically the experience of having success.
Sorry, I'll tee that up again, label. talking about why, if you are rushed to the NHL, when maybe you should stick in the NHL, what do you gain in the American League that you could lose if you come up too soon?
Losing confidence, losing basically the experience of having success. You lose years. Look at a guy like, for example, a guy like Manj. There's a lot of similarities, to quite honest. Success he had and then the success he's having, right? It was because of the maturity and experience. And then look at, you know, somebody like Dylan who had some good success. And then at times they said, well, the coach didn't like Dylan or whatever last year, but that's really not true. It's just the experience that the maturity that the player needs. And usually you are best served. I know from my own experience, I was best served playing in the American Hockey League and becoming a really good player there before going to the NHL. When you look at it everywhere, there's very few players that step in. Those are elite players that step in as underages or 19 or 20 year olds or 21 year olds for that matter. And even with defensemen, it's even longer. If you look at a guy like Val, right? It's got nothing to do other than an experience. It was probably here too early. It's better you play lots and have confidence, feel good and build your game.
I 100% agree.
I don't love the Manjapani comparable. The player I think is a really good comp, but one guy was a sixth rounder and the other guy's a first. Like there's some pedigree here. And Manjapani's first year pro, was he a point per game player? Like what we are seeing here is not common at all. You do not see first year pros go a point per game in the American League. And I'm not saying he's going to be an elite NHLer, but what the stats people will tell you is that if you're flirting with a point per game as a first year pro in the American League, your trajectory is legitimate.
So
this isn't like a flash in the pan.
And he's gone.
I was going to say, with that said, he's played 29 games in the American Hockey League. I guess my argument would be, and I'll definitely argue when he gets back and gets hooked up again, but is it a disservice? Are you now, where's that, like, where's the tipping point where it's now he's now no longer developing. There's bad habits. You're coasting. I don't think he's anywhere close to that. It's 29 games.
That's where I think it, yes, you can talk specifics about him, maybe debate the merits of staying down there or bringing him up and whether guys do this as rookies. I think for me, it's more the philosophy. My philosophy, and I think Daryl's preaching that, and we all want to see these guys in the NHL, but if you're not a difference maker, don't rush it. Is he going to – it is harder to play in the NHL. Sure, we want to find out if he can do it, but what's the rush? Is this team 10 points worse because Jacob Pelche is not in the lineup? And I think you got to think a little longer term than – even if you think he can come up and help your team right now, I think you have to take a longer term because that's what has happened too often recently. A guy has a little bit of success, bring him up, and he doesn't turn into maybe everything he can. And we used to praise the Detroit Red Wings. They have the right way of doing it. When guys come up, they're ready to contribute.
Yeah, there's no cap. You need guys on entry level now. But you're right. They definitely overcooked there.
And the other thing was, too, it would have been a different story because, like you say, there was no cap. They were a veteran-laden team. They spent all kinds of money. So even if Pavel Datsyuk at the time was putting up great numbers in the American Hockey League, they didn't need him in the NHL. They had a very established veteran team at the NHL level. So some of it was philosophy and keeping kids in the A, and also part of it was we don't need to make a decision on bringing them up because we're fine here. We have plenty of secondary scoring.
Again, I don't think that having Pelche up gives this team 4 more wins.
I'll go back now.
No, it doesn't have to, though, right? Like, you need a second line that can produce offensively. That's what they don't have. And if he came up till the deadline and went back down, is he ruined? Is that like, well, now he's not going to be a player?
Maybe not, but Is he ruined by staying down there? And does Daryl have a point that playing in the NHL is a different ballgame? Was Jacob Pelche undeniable in training camp?
Nope, not at all. But go put him against his draft class in the American League and measure him.
I don't care about that. I care about the long-term success of him. And I think, leave him down there. They are on a first-place team. He's playing lights out. Let him keep playing. I mean, Valimaki's been... He references Val, and it's true. They brought him up too soon.
Or was it injuries?
I think Sam Bennett falls into that issue where if he'd have played a few years in the AHL, he'd have been a better player. Now he's turning into a heck of a player in Florida. But you're not. It's like everyone thinks it's a slight that he's not. These guys aren't in the NHL, and you can't treat those guys that way. And he's going to make. He's not going to. Jacob Pelche is not going to be shortchanged because of spending a year in the AHL.
Of course not. But would a 5-game cup of coffee hurt him or help him? That's what.
What
I
for?
To see, I'm to Daryl's point, to see what works in the NHL and what doesn't, and he can have success this year. To Daryl's point, but that and have a great year. But I don't think 2 weeks on the NHL roster, if there's a nice spot in the schedule for both teams, or there's injury trouble, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. That might even be better. Geez, I got to get better at these things.
No, I'm not saying it is, but I say leave him there. Let him play. Let him stay comfortable. Let him focus on what he's doing. And guess what? The Calgary Flames are going to make the playoffs. And I believe that. And when Stockton's done, if the Flames are still playing, come on up. But I don't see the rush. As good as he's been down there, I don't see a rush.
I don't think there's a hard and fast rule. Or that there's, because when you look, it's always Monday morning quarterback with this stuff. When a kid comes up and can step in, then that was the right play. But if a kid comes up after a good start and then maybe doesn't perform, then he gets sent back down. Well, now his confidence is, and you know, look at his numbers after in the American Hockey League. Then that's how it's always spun. It's always spun after the fact once we know how it went. If Pelche stays down, has a great year, makes the team next year, and is great, then it was the right move. To me, it's two different things. There's the Flames' need for secondary scoring, and there's the development of Jacob Pelche. Could Pelche help them? I think that the two are, they can be, but I don't think they should be connected. Do the Flames need secondary? Yes, they do, but I don't know that should necessarily be tied to bringing this kid up. Can you find? Can you address it somewhere else?
I just look at this roster. Like, boy, there's a lot of fourth liners, isn't there? Richardson, Lewis,
Pitlick. Like we said, though, Ryan, this team's not going to be. You're not a player away from being a elite team. You are a grinder team. You're a team.
I'm not disputing that. I mean, they're going to have to win one way. They're Islanders West. But wouldn't you like to know when you head into the playoffs what this kid looks like at this level or not? I mean, I just don't understand the, like, I definitely get the take your time, make sure they're over ready, but I don't think 2 weeks in the NHL ruins that. I don't think his season is now lost if he comes up and doesn't score for a week and a half. And if he does, you're like, oh, okay, now we might have something in the playoffs. Or if we were injured, I like that more than Ružička. You don't know that right now.
I wonder, too, about what the kid is thinking. If Jacob Pelche gets called up, do they tell him you're coming up for 2 weeks and then going down? Because to me, you get excited and you come up. And regardless of what they've told you, I think as a competitor, you're like, they're not sending me back down. I'm going to stay. I'm going to play so well. And then maybe you don't play well. Now you second guess yourself a little bit at the NHL level. And then you get sent down and you doubt yourself because you told yourself you were going to stay and you were going to make an impact. And then you go to the American Hockey League and you're back. And regardless what people will tell you, so, well, he didn't stick, so he's back, even though that was the plan. I just think there's more to it than it's a great thing to come up, ride the charter for a couple weeks and then go back. I think there's inevitably some disappointment and some questioning of your abilities when you get sent down to the American League.
If it happens. I mean, like, we all talked about taking time with, oh, don't rush Monahan, and geez, you know, Matthew Tkachuk going back to junior, Brian Burke said the whole camp, but when guys are better than your other options and maybe they are ready, you don't know till they're up if they're ready. And I agree with Daryl that best case scenario, you let him go win a title and be a leader in the American League. But he's exactly what they're missing, what he's going to end up being, which is a middle six winger that can play both sides of the puck. So, you're half glass empty, Dean. So, of course, you're thinking about if it doesn't work.
Well,
There's a lot of instances where it has worked. Like when Madge Panic comes up, you're like, damn, there's something here.
But when did Madge, he made the team out of camp. He came in and won a spot. My question, I guess, is when teams need secondary scoring, what do they do? Do they go to the farm or do they go outside and get it?
I just told you about the Minnesota Wild who brought up their two top prospects. I mean, there's
lots
of ways
to do it.
Yeah, but
they're COVID because they were down bodies.
So is that it, or is it because those guys are studs and they're ready? Depends who you ask.
We sit
like
here.
What I'm hearing is that Boldy will stay up and Rossi will go back down.
I mean, you go back in time and Sam Bennett, man, it would have been great if he could have spent more time in the American Hockey League. The kid came up and had a 4-goal game. It's like, he's here. He's arrived for the highest pick
that's
ever.
That's the most revisionist history of all time.
No, but
he scores 18 as a rookie, right?
It also happened. It also happened with Berchi. It's happening right now with Valimaki. It's not revisionist. It happens.
Valimaki's injuries. Like, where is the huge plot where he should have been in the American? Like, the injuries were a massive issue.
He came in
and then
played.
He steps in and he's your best defenseman in a playoff series.
But okay, so then he gets injured again, comes back. What did we say this year? He doesn't look ready. He's taking hits that he's taking hits he shouldn't be taking. He doesn't look confident. He doesn't look like he believes in himself.
Yeah, and he played once in the span of like 10 games. Like, clearly the confidence was rattled. But I mean, I don't know he was dramatically worse than Zadorov was, but certainly your confidence is going to be ruined if you make one mistake and you're gone for a month. In a best case scenario, he would have been healthy and have played 2 years in the American League by now. I agree. It's just he's had 1 year he hasn't been hurt in the last four or five. That's it.
I just look again. There's evidence for every argument or every discussion point, but you look at the list of guys who are in the NHL that are great players that aren't those undeniable superstars, because you'll see photos of them online. So, oh yeah, Ryan Getzlaff, was he in a Calder Cup? Oh, he played in the AHL. Jamie Benn, well, he played in the AHL. Like, there's so many great NHLers that were first round picks or second or third that did go and play. We're gushing over Zegras. He played in the AHL for a chunk.
No one's saying he shouldn't play in the A. The question is, when does he come up? That's what we're trying to figure out. Of course he's in the right spot right now, and he's playing the first year pro. The question is, does the skill set play up? We don't know the answer.
So I guess in bringing up Jacob Pelche, is it A, is it because he's beyond what the American Hockey League can challenge him, or is it for the Flames to get secondary scoring?
You know more about the player, and he's better than some of the crap they're rolling out in their bottom six.
You don't want him playing bottom six.
Well, I mean, I guess it would depend how he number lines. But yeah, you want him to be in a top nine role with good players around him. You don't want him playing with Lewis and Richardson. I agree.
Yeah.
But that's the hole they're trying to fill. You know, you can put Backlund and Coleman together and someone else, and that's the checking line. And the top line looks like it's going to stay together because they haven't really broken it up. The line in between that can create offense does not exist for this team. You have Mangiapane plus, like, why is Tyler Pitlick on a second line more often than not? That's completely the wrong spot for him. He should be a fourth line right winger, but they got like three of them.
Just trying to look at what they had some interesting practice lines yesterday. And I guess when you have this many days between games, you can do whatever you want. The line of Lindholm, Gaudreau, Tkachuk, it stays together. Dubé centering Mangiapane and then Richie on the right side.
Now Richie, second liner.
Backlund.
This is why we're talking about it, guys.
Backlund with Pitlick and Coleman. So is that Monahan between Lucic and Lewis?
That's
my point, he might be ready, But it's almost more to Rhett's point. I don't think you are worlds better with Jacob Pelche or whoever for that matter. I don't think the answer is Jacob Pelche. I would put his development as priority one, and if we need help, then I go get it somewhere else. Because if it's Dubé, Pelche, and Richie, or Backlund, Pitlick, Pelche, what are you expecting there?
Well, no, if it's Dubé, Mangiapane, and Pelche, what does that look like? You got a lot of pace, you've got a lot of guys with offensive instincts, and you've got one really good two-way player and one that we think will become a really good two-way player. I'd love to see it. It doesn't mean that if you bring him up that, well, that's the line the rest of the year. Boy, we're all in on it. No, it doesn't work. Send him down. Give him a week. Let him see where he's at. But again, if this is a Stanley Cup contender, like if it's Tampa, if it's one of the Carolina, if it's Florida, there's not room for that because they're better, they're deeper. So I do agree that in a perfect world, he's not up because you're too good for him. But you're just not that right now.
There's also the chance that, we can bat this around a lot. You can't. If you're good enough probably to make the playoffs, but you're not that good that you can slough off points. And I don't know that putting Pelche in makes you win or lose. But if it is a hindrance to you getting more points because he can't keep up or he's not being productive or whatever it might be, my opinion on it is the upside isn't enough to risk losing confidence by being sent down. Or even the change. Let him finish it out. Let him feel great. When you come up, know you're going to dominate. Don't wonder. Let's not stick a pinky into the water. I'm ready to go. Let's play. And they do need help for sure. And he might be better. Well, he should be better than Richie on a second line. But I don't know that Mangiapane, Dubé, and Pelche sounds like a line that the other team is circling going, oof. Dubé's struggling, in my opinion. He's learning to play center. This isn't a guy that can protect Pelche. Right? If he's out of place at all, who's the... I mean, they are... I think Mangiapane's responsible and very good, but I still think that that line with Dubé just learning to play center, I mean, he's played it some, but do you look at him and go, oh, yeah, he's completely comfortable in his excelling? I don't.
What you can't debate is that they need the secondary scoring, because even Mangiapane, because your top three scorers are your top the top line. Then you've got Mangiapane, and he has 1 point in his last 8 games. And you knew he was going to tail off, and I don't think I think he's probably due to bounce back a little bit, but still, it's Mangiapane. And then Oliver Shillington is fifth in team scoring. Like, then you're Monahan, Rasmus Anderson, Lucic, Coleman, Dubé, Backlund.
Muck.
They're way
you're
down.
Muck.
So do they need help? For sure. For sure they do. But if you were to ask me,
as much responsibility for a Blake Coleman and a Michael Backlund? And even Dubé, who's here? Would we look at those points and say that's enough?
It's a very good point. And I think the answer is absolutely yes. You need more offense, and maybe it's crazy. And this isn't a Backlund shot, but even Michael Backlund, knowing what he is, appreciating all that he is, you need a little bit more. Dubé's got 11 points in 33. I think that there's no question it's been a slow start. And you like everything about Blake Coleman, but I said it, a couple weeks ago, I thought there was going to be a little bit more offense. And he's got 2 points in the last game?
They're putting up a point every 3 games, all of them.
So
that's pretty much what it is.
So while you're striving for secondary scoring, you have to feel like it's probably in the locker room right now, more so than in the American League. But would you be stunned if Pelche comes in and fits in seamlessly and all of a sudden they've got a great little kid line there? It absolutely can happen. But I feel like when you look and analyze what's best for players, AHL, up too soon, down too soon, do you play? it's case by case study, and you can only use it to your argument well after the fact and say it was clearly they did the right thing, and it's clear they rushed him and did the wrong thing. We'll break. Look at that. 7:29. We've got Daryl Sutter coming up in less than an hour. Just after 8, we'll talk to Daryl. We will give you some audio when we come back. Two Philadelphia Flyer greats, Bobby Clark, Ron Hextall, both have been general manager of this team, and no longer are they general manager of the team. The Philadelphia Flyers look like they're going to be a non-playoff team this year. Who is responsible for that? Bobby Clark says, that's easy. It's Ron Hextall. Great audio coming for you next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
This is Boomer in the Morning with Rhett and Ryan on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hello, everyone. We continue here on your Wednesday, hour two of the program. Rhett Warner, Ryan Pinder. It's Boomer here downtown studios, live. Unless you're listening on the podcast, which you can do now, which not live. Not trying to confuse you or give you a false bill of goods. Just trying to be honest with you. We'll talk about Nashville maybe coming up a little bit. Ryan Pinder, we're having some technical difficulties, but we'll get Pinder in here shortly. Tuukka Rask is back with the Boston Bruins. That's a real stunner. That's been in the works for months and months. So now Tuukka Rask is back. The Boston Bruins find themselves in a pretty good spot. I don't know. I didn't realize this until kind of the other day, just sitting around looking, doing some prep for the show. In the Eastern Conference, the teams that are in as we sit today, the Atlantic has Florida, Tampa Bay, and Toronto. The Metro has Carolina, the Rangers, and Washington. And the two wild cards, Boston and Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh's won 10 of 11. They had that 10-game winning streak broken on the weekend. Then, on the outside looking in, the Detroit Red Wings, they are three back of Boston. But Boston has 5 games in hand on the Detroit Red Wings. You go points percentage, which somebody on this program has told you that's the way to do it. And it probably is the way to do it, because if you look at it, the Wings, 500, the Bruins, 625. Rhett Warner, what I'm telling you is the teams that are in today are pretty much these are the teams that are going to be in. There's very little.
They're locked and loaded, Dean.
Other than some juggling and some shuffling within the divisions and the wild cards. It's done, and a third of the season to go. Pretty wild. The haves and have-nots. The penthouse and the outhouse. That's what we're telling you. So how do you feel about that if you're on the, the New York Islanders? Now, they have the most runway. They've only played 28 games. But if you're 30, 35 games into the season, you know it's over. Makes for a long year. Now, I guess if you're in Montreal and Ottawa, you probably knew before the 30-game mark. But I don't know that I'm sure that someone will do the math. When's the last time that the 8 teams have been locked in? And it's been this way for a while. So I don't know.
Well, the Islanders and Philly were probably the teams you thought would be battling there, right?
Yeah, for sure the Islanders, right? They were always in contention for tops in that division. Philadelphia, I feel like, is always kind of within striking distance. Maybe Detroit is a bit of a surprise to be where they're at, but it's over. Barring something crazy going on, the old St. Louis, we were 31st and came back and won the cup, but that's what it's going to be in the East. Now, we'll move forward. One of those teams is the Philadelphia Flyers. It's been a disappointing season. They have, they're under 500, 13, 15, and 7. The Carter Hart, I don't know that he has answered all of the critics. He's been better than he was a year ago, but I don't feel like they sit there and look and say this was a one-year blip on the radar and this guy is going to be he's our goalie of the present and the future, and we've got a real stud here. They made some significant change in the offseason, which looks like it has not really worked. Now, Ellis hasn't played for them much. Ristolainen, we had Frank Seravalli on, and we talked about this yesterday, but a lot of the changes that were made in the offseason by Chuck Fletcher have not paid dividends and they find themselves on the outside. Now, Cam and Strick, you've got Cam Jansen, former St. Louis Blue, and Andy Strickland. They have a podcast that they do together. And they got some great guests, and I enjoy the podcast. I think it's a good listen. They had Bobby Clark on, and of course, he's the longtime, best Flyer of all time. Asked about, why are the Flyers here? How do we get here? Offseason, they added a bunch of guys. They've traded guys. They have some good young players, Konechny and Farabee. But yet here they are, a non-playoff team. They're going to have to talk about trading Claude Giroux, who's a pending UFA, tearing this thing down. How did you get here? And Bobby Clark went right after Ron Hextall. Now, Hextall was the GM between 2014 and 2018. So five drafts on his watch. He was an AGM with the team prior to that. But it was Hextall's team for essentially 4.5 to 5 years. And Clark said it was then that got them to where they are now.
He alienated everybody right away. He shut his door. He locked the doors. He was the boss and nobody else was part of it. We end up drafting. We get the second pick in the draft and we end up drafting Nolan Patrick. None of our scouts wanted Nolan Patrick. I don't know where Patrick should have gone after his performances in Brown. And he's a pretty good player, but they wanted Makar. Of course he went next. No, he's a superstar, and Patrick hasn't played number. But Hextall made that choice himself. And there were other choices that were made in our drafts that we're paying for. You know, we've got two or three first-round picks that are never going to play. And that's why we're struggling. Hextall made some huge mistakes.
So Hextall, as the GM, he was the boss. He closed his door and went about his business. Scouts. Trying to get his ear, but apparently, according to Bobby Clark, not so much there. So you start to look at it. Now, we talked about this maybe a week ago. I think whenever Cale Makar does something phenomenal, which is about a week by week, every single week now, you go and you revisit that draft. And in fact, the Flyers did move up. They got into pick number 2. Nico Hischier goes number 1 to New Jersey. Nolan Patrick 2 to Philly. And then Haskinen to Dallas at 3, Cale Makar to Colorado at 4. And, I mean, Makar looks like nothing. He's leading the NHL in goals. Right now, he's on another level. And could Philadelphia use a guy like that? Every team in the league could.
Yeah, who's not begging for that guy?
But, yeah, the Nolan Patrick, it didn't work. And there were some injuries in there as well. He's now been dealt. They've tried to rebound. I was looking at these other drafts. Now, Hextall comes in.
We're looking at other drafts. Come on.
I know. It's weird, right? His first draft, they go at 17, Travis Sanheim with the Calgary Hitmen. Good NHL defenseman, right? Obe Kubel, winger out of Val d'Or. He's played 123 games. The next year, round 1, they have 2 picks, Provorov, Konechny. Decent.
That was good. You kidding me?
26
so top yeah. 4 defensemen and top 6 forward, yeah. Like maybe even top, depending on you slot them.
Yeah, Provorov's played 400 games already, 382 for Konechny. Guys that any team would have him. Any team would love to have him in the NHL. Then to 2016, a Russian center, German Rubtsov. He played in the Q as a teenager. He's been in the American League since. Has played just 4 NHL games. I'm not going to pretend to tell you what he's going.
What pick was that again?
That was 22 overall.
Yeah, so you're in that range where you're going to take some cuts and miss a bit.
And then in 17, when you're talking about if Bobby Clark is referencing first rounders that aren't going to play, they took Patrick at 2, and then later in that first round, Morgan Frost out of the Sioux Greyhounds. And it's not been a great run for him either. So I don't know. It's one thing we always question, how much credit or blame does a GM deserve because of a draft? It's on their watch, but if you trust in your scouting staff and hand them the keys on draft day and say, you guys did the work, get in there. If there's a trade that comes across, then I'll get involved. And apparently, Hextall was the reverse. He was going to do things as he saw fit. Now, is this sour grapes from Clark? Did you feel this
yes.
way about Ron? did you feel this way about Hextall? Because I think to this point, the the thought of Hextall, because he went to, remember, he was with the LA Kings as an AGM there to Dean Lombardi, got a cup there, shows back up in Philadelphia, and it sounded like this is a great hire. But you're saying old man yells at clouds.
Well, is Chuck Fletcher not the bigger issue here in terms of the GM that's made the blunders? Like a first, a second, and a player for 1 year of Rasmus Ristolainen? Like, what the hell's going on there?
Yeah, it's not...
He's been there since 2018, I think, Chuck Fletcher. Am I crazy? It sounds like it's more recent than that. But
no, 2018 is when they...
was Nolan Patrick a way off the board? Whoa! Or was he a consensus number one overall pick for most of that draft year?
Yeah, he was a number one, if not for the whole draft year, then he was, to take him at number two or three was not going to be a shock.
No, and you probably would have criticized him for not taking him at that point because he was talked about as the number one pick for so long, and he came to Philly with them in a massive cap mess, and he, I thought, did really well with it. You look at the GMs before and after him, I'd take Hextall, but... Frank Saravalli's covered that market a ton. We chat with him every Tuesday. Yesterday, you can catch it on the podcast. He says this on it all, and he knows that market and that team very well. No doubt a bit of revisionist history here. Patrick, pretty much a consensus top pick. What is more interesting, the Flyers almost never eat their own. To hear Clark blast Hextall and to be so willing publicly, that's saying something. So the temperature's hot there.
It is, and because I know you've
just been the most middling team in the last 10 years. If there was a team that you had to put between 7 and 10 every year in the East, it's Philly. And that's tough, and it's similar to what we've seen in Calgary, because, boy, if you're really bad, now you could, reload. And they weren't really bad the year they had Patrick. I think they finished they were 13th in the draft lottery and moved all the way up. And... the flip side is, man, we're always just so close, but not that competitive. Like, it's a frustrating spot for an organization.
I said it months ago when I had read it online somewhere about something the Flames had done, something the Flyers had done, and somebody said it was a Philadelphia fan. Oh, so we're the Flames are Philadelphia Flyers West.
Yeah, they're mirror images of each other.
I don't know if I would have... Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it, but then you look into it, and yeah, here's a team that spends to the cap. There's a huge pressure to win every year. They make coaching changes. They make GM changes, and it's rarely amounted to anything. What did Frank say yesterday? They've won one playoff series, or they've had with Claude Giroux? I had no idea that it's been... As futile a run there for the Flyers with Giroux.
30s.
Man. And now you feel like they have to, unless he doesn't want to go anywhere, but you probably have to move Claude Giroux.
I wouldn't mind him in a Flames uniform.
Yeah, I know you wouldn't. It's a big ask.
I wonder what he costs. It's an expiring contract. They ain't going anywhere.
Full no move. 34, 8.275, and can leave at the end of the year.
And cash owed way lower than the cap hit. Hello, savings for the owner.
So real money.
All cheer for all the time.
Yeah, we do. We have the owner's pocketbooks in our hearts, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah,
so.
And
I wonder with Bobby Clark, does he think I'm going on a podcast? And what's a podcast? No one's going to hear this because this thing caught fire yesterday.
Well, and I think that's what happened to Esposito. What was that, 5 years ago or 10 years ago with the Marty San Luis doesn't want to leave? Oh, and you can curse if you want to, Phil.
Just
let her rip. It's cool. It's not a traditional media. Have some fun. Because I don't think he thought that was going to do what that did either.
And it did. And he did swear. And it did catch
more
fire.
Than once.
It was more than once. Are you?
I mean,
you're lobbying for it now. Is that what you're doing?
My foggy recollection of it is
not one ounce of evidence. It's the same as this bullshit about Marty St. Louis being traded to New York for Callahan because he doesn't get along with Yzerman. What a bunch of shit that is! Don't give me this shit. You're going to trade Marty St. Louis, who has a no-movement clause, He doesn't want to leave. For Callahan, who the kid, I like him, he's a heart and soul-er, but he couldn't score more than 25 or 30 goals in his f***ing lifetime, and he doesn't play all the time because he gets hurt, because he plays like he's 6'5".
Update, spoiler alert, Marty St. Louis was traded for Ryan Callahan.
He did want to leave.
Yeah, yeah, he did want to leave, which I guess was it was kind of stemming back to Stevie Y.
Olympic selection,
who
right?
was the GM in Tampa at the time, and he didn't, was he on the team or didn't make the team or didn't get
take
into games,
the
whatever it was. Yeah. Doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to leave.
Don't give me that shirt.
He doesn't want to leave.
And traded. I'll tell you what, you got to be careful. These podcasts are a big deal. Apparently our podcast, if you listen to it, it was something else. It was yesterday's show, right? But they've rectified that. So good news there. What else did I want to get to? Hey, Rhett, do you know Kodak Black?
Yeah, I got one. I use it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Is that a one of those instant cameras or the?
Yeah.
Digital, not digital.
No,
not digital.
Riley, you know what right Kodak Black is, right?
I was aware of him, I was aware of him as a person.
And what is, so now go ahead, what do we got?
Well, he's a rapper, so people call it mumble rap. Here's a little clip. I made sure it was the clean version. They don't like to see you win, and they want to see you in a penitentiary. I need me a little baby who won't listen. Girl, I don't want to be the one you hear again. My mama told me, boy, make a decision.
Okay.
Is anyone else just like cringing, waiting for a huge F-bomb to drop by accident?
Yeah, kind of.
Verse.
I trust
that. It's like we're risking.
I trust.
I listened through it like 7 times.
Let's think about mumble rap. You can just curse all you want. No one
yeah.
We were talking about it earlier on the fan feedback line. Somebody texts in. Music producer here. Kodak Black is a brutal mumble rapper who got fame during a big wave of crappy auto-tune music. He's been in and out of prison since he was 18 and always stays relevant by weird videos and quotes all the time. Lol.
That now, sounds right.
Before Betty Bye last night, I got on the old Twitterverse and got looking around, and apparently Kodak Black was at the Florida Panthers game last night. Was he from there? Either way, people were very impressed and very excited to see that Kodak Black was in the building. Had seats along the glass, really good seats.
No.
And then it's like, you know what? Hey, why don't we go up to one of the suites? And then the video showed up of some...
What video, Dean? What a highlights on the Jumbotron, that kind of a video came?
What are we talking about, Dean? Come on.
Apparently, Kodak Black was getting a little frisky in one of the suites. And it looked like there were other people in the suite.
Yeah, and one of the guys in the suite actually posted the video on his phone from about 6 feet away. He was actually helping her find a contact that fell out.
Also, Kodak had been arrested on New Year's Day, just so you know.
On New Year's Day?
That was a misunderstanding.
Yeah, 3 a.m.
Well, that's you just heading out in Miami at that time.
Yeah.
And apparently other videos have since surfaced where it was not what you thought it was.
It was the contact.
They were just dancing and having a good time, which can happen in Florida.
Like all things, I'd like to bring it back to me where just last week.
You big twerker? Is that what it is?
Well, no, just last week you and some of your buddies there and your texters were harassing me for my mumbling, and just because I'm ahead of the game and you losers can't keep up with what's trendy, you critique me.
So stop haranguing.
I accept your apologies.
Wizard.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. You're keeping up with the times when you're sitting there.
I'm down with it, Dean.
Well, yeah, I guess go what it is.
See? Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, it's really good.
Quality.
I think Daryl was early in that game, wasn't he?
He really was. That's where Rhett learned it. Learned
that's
from
right.
one of the best.
0-4.
Yeah.
0-3, yeah.
Yeah. It was not what you thought it was, is what I'm here to tell you. There has been subsequent video that has shown up since that it's not what you thought it was, and you can all just move on. Nothing to see.
You ever lost a contact, Dean? It's you got to get that thing back. Right
no,
away.
I've never.
Don't want it to dry out, Dean.
Yeah.
How are those eyes, by the way?
Oh, it's a. I mean,
I need an update. It's been a while since we heard about lasers.
Tomorrow, back for another one.
Nice.
Come on, are you serious?
Yeah.
What's the count to? Where are we at?
I've honestly lost count. It's double digit visits to the clinic. Either way, I went back to visit my original optometrist, old Dr. Virk, old Bunny, my boy Bunny. He's like, you know, let me take a look. I'm like, dude, I've gone to this place 8, 9, 10 times, and I don't know what's happening. And apparently, it's much like the other guy said. I'm a hell of a healer. I am an unbelievable.
You heal too well.
I got so much pigment in my eyes, you wouldn't believe it.
Calves in your eyes.
I got
world class
pigment for days up there. So yeah, they got to put a little thing in there because there's fluid buildup, and you don't want that. You need some fluid, much like with your contact lenses, but you need to have some fluid in there. But it's not draining correctly, and I'm getting too much. There's some pressure in there. We got to put a hole in there, let off the pressure, but I keep healing over the hole. My hole's healing.
You got to drain.
You're a baboon.
I'm a healer. I'm
drain. Drain the pain, dude.
I'm a hole healer. So I got to go tomorrow, and the guy's going to come in. Hey, how you doing? Put your chin here. Tick, 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 tick. And he'll get the lasers going and poke a hole in my eye, and hopefully it doesn't close over. And the other thing is, I've had it done to both eyes, and every time I go in, it's like, well, the left eye looks good, but man, we're going to have to do the right eye. Come back, look at the right eye. Well, right eye looks good, but man, now the left eye is growing in. So,
now, Rhett, your dog wasn't one of those working dogs, one of those seeing eye dogs. That's a different kind of.
Well, I knew Dean was struggling, Ryan, and everyone's criticized me for that as well. But it was nothing but kind-hearted goodness, and I gave him a dog
is.
That can help him along.
Yeah, that's,
get him where he needs to go.
He's a good boy, but I'll tell you what: if he's more of a comfort dog than a safety seeing eye dog, I'll tell you that.
Whatever helps you get through this, Dean. Whatever will drain the fluid.
If I had to follow him around, if he was my leader, it would be to front of the fireplace and lay down all day. That's all it would end up being. Dude, I got to go to work. Dude, we got to get up. No, can't you see the fire's on? This is great. We're going to break here. We'll come back. Daryl Sutter, head coach of the Calgary Flames, going to join us. What did you do in quarantine? Were you Netflixing? What were you doing? We'll find that out. And also talk maybe some hockey with him, as his Flames have played very little in the way of games, certainly on home ice. How do you plan? It sounds like, and he talked about it yesterday, sounds like the schedule, they kind of know what they're looking at now in terms of postponements, games, and what they're going to do. But all of that said, how do we move on from here? Is it like starting fresh? We'll talk to Big D when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.